Betsy and Thomas here for the American Intelligence Media. And no, that thumbnail is not clickbait. We've done the research and we're here to present to you a case that Donald Trump is a traitor to the United States and a genocidist. Douglas, is what that statement, is that overreach?
Well, once we present the evidence, people can decide themselves. And that evidence came out recently. Now, as you know, we used to do Trump tweet decodes, and there was always things in between the lines. And there were times that we had some real questions when he appointed globalists like Rex Tillerson or Wilbur Ross, or when he appointed Sessions and did nothing about it. Sessions did absolutely nothing, not one single thing, and yet he didn't fire him. Then he appointed Bill Barr, who was definitely a globalist and a Bushite, and who was involved in the hanging Chad controversy. And so, you know, we started to question some things a long time ago, which you know, because we have it all on tape and you've heard them in our podcast. But recently, we were sent a copy of the executive order from Joe Biden. That would be pretend President Joe Biden. And we were shocked because the first thing I said to Michael McKibben, who, by the way, welcome to the show, Michael.
Hi, Douglas. I went out and bought a flak jacket for this interview.
Well, good, because we're going to need it. We're going into high altitude, and we're going to be doing barrel rolls. So I said to Betsy, when she sent me this executive order, no, this is impossible. This is absolutely impossible. And she questioned me why, and I said, because there was no national emergency called in March of 2020.
Are you kidding? How many times do you in the audience recall Douglas saying that there was no national emergency called? When I sent him over, because we're sitting chair by chair, you know, and we still text, and I sent this over to him, he just yelled. He said, no, this is not right. But then goes and checks and finds out that, yes, there was. And it was sneaked out on us. Nobody reported it. So, sorry, but there's a lot more drama involved in this, Douglas.
A tremendous amount of drama. And then, of course, we called Mike and the Miners and said, okay, what's up here? And they started researching it. We started researching it. Now we have made a timeline. And we're going to share with you that timeline, as well as the article that you have before you. And basically, you can decide yourself. But it's like that feeling that happens when you have a sneaky suspicion that someone you're doing a business deal with is not quite all on the up and up. And then one day, all of a sudden, in a matter of minutes, you realize that you've been conned. It was a shell game. It was basically kabuki theater. It was just a drama. And basically, you can decide for yourself. Now, I don't need to tell you that Betsy has a very strong opinion about this. And Michael McKibben and the Miners are, I think, slowly awakening to this. I myself feel completely stupid that I was duped, because I said, as Betsy just pointed out, many, many times, the All Hazards Pandemic Preparedness Act is what caused the CDC and NIH to say there's a pandemic in America. Well, that's not true. We now found out something quite different. And let's talk about the very first thing on this list. And Michael is going to present that to you, because that is where he and the Miners have discovered fraud.
Yes, we discovered in the original pronouncement of the pandemic by Secretary Azar, that occurred and is cited in the Biden executive order as January 31st, 2020. And that was then followed shortly thereafter by a pronouncement by President Trump affirming that announcement of the pandemic. Then we started looking in detail at that particular announcement, and we noticed something very curious, that there's something called effective dates on these laws. Much like in a contract, you'll see effective date. And the effective date for this document was January 31st, 2020. But then they had a caveat in there that said that even though January 31st was the day it was announced, it was backdated to January 27th, 5 days earlier. And of course, when a normal human being on Main Street is going to see that and say, well, somebody made a mistake, you know, it's just kind of like clerical error. Well, I can tell you for sure that at this level, with the amount of money that was being paid to these attorneys, which in Washington get over $1,000 an hour, this was no mistake. For some reason, they needed to backdate this by 5 days. Well, as anyone knows who does any kind of contract law, backdating a document is generally fraud. It's not always fraud, depending on how it was backdated and whether both parties agreed. But in this case, with the amount of importance of the health of the nation at stake, this was no mistake, and it was backdated. So therefore, the entire announcement is fraudulent.
And let's not forget that we warned the president years ago that Alex Azar was severely compromised because of some human trafficking incidents and things like that in Florida. And I'll be pulling up those articles. State of the Nation ran some great pieces back then and showed us who this Alex Azar is. So when he was placed as human and health and human services, we knew, okay, they've put an agent there at the top of the agency who is compromised, who will easily be blackmailed for whatever purpose. So when we saw this backdating and we also knew this information about Azar, that's a big bang.
Yeah. Well, it definitely stinks. And the fact is, with a document of this importance to the welfare of not only the United States, but the entire world, to make the excuse that a backdated document of this importance was a clerical error is laughable. And I know that's what's going to happen because that's what crooked lawyers always do when they're caught in some sort of fiddle. And the question is, why were they backdating it by only 5 days? Because as you have pointed out to me, Douglas, and you follow this a lot closer than I have, the total number of COVID deaths reported by the BBC, or not BBC, the CDC, it might as well be the BBC, at that time on January 31st was 5 deaths. And therefore, I don't see any reasonable person could possibly proclaim this to be a pandemic when 5 people had died. I mean, sadly, they died. But from a statistical standpoint, there was no statistical emergency here. And so therefore, they were jumping the gun because as we now know, it wasn't until March 11th of 2020, which was about 6 weeks later, that the WHO declared coronavirus to be a pandemic. So why were they jumping the gun? Is the big question on the January 31st date backdated to January 27th. And from our research, we had done a lot of research on a particular Harvard professor by the name of Charles M. Lieber, and we had recalled that it was in January that he had been indicted for his nanotechnology, biological, chemical, research that he was doing in conjunction between Harvard, most of our funding agencies in the United States, the NIH, and various universities in China. We knew that. And in fact, in his indictment, which occurred, by the way, on January 28th, he was indicted with 2 Chinese people. And so he has 66 patents in his name, and he's obviously a cutout because he couldn't have possibly been involved in 66 inventions like this, easily receiving funding into the tens of billions of dollars for this activity. And then he suddenly is arrested on January 28th, which, by the way, is the day after the backdated date of the declaration of the pandemic. So our Spidey sense shows us this is clearly what was going on. He was inventing nanotechnology to be used in biowarfare. That was clear. We know that's from the patents. Anybody can look at these patents. They can actually see who funded these patents. And it included many patents funded by the National Institute of Health, in addition to DARPA, the Navy, the Air Force, the Army, MITRE Corporation, various spy agencies were involved with him. And so it's clear that he was indicted in order to hide his testimony, and so that if any questions came up about the use of his nanotechnologies in any of this coronavirus activity, he would be able to claim that he couldn't talk about it. And that is an old lawyer trick among corrupt individuals who have the courts in their pockets, and they use the courts to shield their key people from having to talk about it and giving them an excuse not to talk about it.
Yes, and immediately, as soon as I Googled this information, I found out that Alex Azar, the head of Health and Human Services, nationwide public health emergency, you'll find dates of what you found, the actual document is the 31st, but you'll find dates of the 27th, 28th, 29th. So you find basically that there was conscious disinformation being given out over this. There had to be a reason. And what would be the reason? Well, it became very evident when we looked also then at what else happened on January 31st. Trump, in contradistinction to Fauci's advice, Burke's advice, Redfield's advice, and all the advice of everyone, put restrictions on flights from China. When he did that, there had been five supposed coronavirus deaths. Now, first off, we know that the coronavirus was never isolated. So how in the world would they have known that? Those people didn't take a test to demonstrate that they supposedly were positive for coronavirus. And we know that no tissue samples have ever been taken in an autopsy from anyone but one person in America. Basically, what we're saying here is at that moment, it then became absolutely clear that Trump, who got on board early calling it the Chinese virus, and we have pointed out it is not a Chinese virus. Yes, the P4 lab in Wuhan was doing the same research as 22 other P4 labs, all of them funded by the National Institute of Health directly through Anthony Fauci. Yes, we knew that. That literally anyone can do this research and find it, but I had been yelling the whole time that the all hazards what creates the pandemic response in America is called the Pandemic and All Hazards Preparedness Act of 2006, which is a reauthorization of the Public Health Service Act of initially the act that laid down the rules for these things. But in 2006, they had already prepared to basically follow the rules that if the World Health Organization of the United Nations declares a pandemic, and as we've pointed out in our research, that would take only three people having an illness, literally flu, could be considered a pandemic if it was in three different zones in the world. In other words, a flu, which kills well over 100,000 people a year in America, when you find out that by January 31st, when Trump said no more flights from China, accused China of being the source of the Wuhan virus, basically 10 times that amount of people die of flu every day in America. It could not possibly be considered a nationwide public health emergency. No way, not now, not ever. And then we started looking closer. So on the very same day that this was fraudulently entered into the record, we find that Trump already started taking action on this against the advice of the very people who control the Pandemic and All Hazards Preparedness Act, the NIH, the CDC, who must take their orders from the World Health Organization. So then we looked at the next day. Oh my gosh, that was the big shock, because in Biden's recent executive order, he reinstates in March of 2021 what was done in March of 2020, which was a national emergency was called. Now, I want to make a clear distinction. A national emergency can be called by the president for literally, it doesn't even define how many different things could cause the president to have complete justification for that. But it then must be ratified by both the House and the Senate. The Congress must agree with this national emergency. Now, I want you to think about this for a second. On March the 1st, there were, by that time, 24 supposed coronavirus deaths. And Trump declares a national emergency for the health issue of coronavirus, which sometime before, of course, as we pointed out, Alex Azar called a nationwide public health emergency. There was already a nationwide health emergency. Why did Trump call a special national emergency? Because when that happens, he then has power. When a pandemic is called, which is not the same thing as what Alex Azar did, when he created a nationwide public health emergency, that is in the law. That is in the Public Health Service Act. He has the right to do so. But that's not a presidential declaration of a national emergency. Why would he do that? And why would he stop flights from China, accusing China as being the source of this, when we now know that there were multiple cases in America at the end of October, November, December, and January? None of which ever reached the CDC's counting of coronaviruses, by the way. And we pointed out that this was, of course, a British Purbright Institute experiment done in Wuhan with the help of the Muriel Animal Hospital and probably delivered by their intelligence agency, Kinetic. They've done this with the Asian flu, the swine flu, you name it. China has been the petri dish for the Brits. Why would Trump immediately accuse the Chinese Communist Party of doing this to their own people?
I know, because he's protecting the British pilgrims and their operation. And by shutting off all the travel to China, that would cut off this narrative that we were hot on the trail with Lieber. Because, Michael, is Lieber connected to the British pilgrims?
Oh, his funding is all Pilgrim Society funding for all of his research. So by then, our whole research R&D operation during his time was controlled by Serco, by MI6, and various banks. And he was in their pocket. It's totally obvious.
And Brexit and the attempt for Brexit was not being received well by the European Union, and Britain was going down. So what did they do? They had to destroy Chinese supremacy in world economics. And so basically they made them the scapegoat, and Trump bit the whole thing off. He went hook, line, and sinker into this one, and even went in contradistinction to what Fauci, one of the most evil men in history, has now led us into. He went even further. Fauci said, no, there's no need to cut off the flights from China. Well, there had to be a reason for that. Now, all you have to do is look at the very next thing. And that's that March the 1st, when there were 24 supposed deaths of coronavirus, then March 11th, the World Health Organization declares a pandemic, a global pandemic. Excuse me, 24 people do not constitute in America a pandemic. That is insane. It is illogical, and it is an oxymoron. And then in March the 13th, Congress confirms Trump's, not only the World Health, basically it comes down to the Assistant Secretary of Health and Human Services for preparedness is the one who then declares the pandemic in America, not based upon their own opinion or the CDC or the NIH. They are basically bound by law to follow the recommendations of the World Health Organization. That should be illegal. And every single politician that voted for these laws that I've mentioned before, the Public Health Service Act and the Pandemic and All Hazards Preparedness Act, they're all criminals because they gave away our constitutional rights. But Trump trumped that by causing and declaring a national emergency over this when there was no emergency. And even before the corrupt World Health Organization called the pandemic. And then on March the 13th, think about this. The combined Congress supported Trump. The combined Congress didn't support Trump on anything ever. They fought him tooth and fang on everything. But for this, they all supported it.
Yeah, because the uniparty's all coming together. All the British Pilgrim operatives in America coming together for this. And I want to tell you, folks, sometimes people get lost in all these acts and these numbers you throw out. Here's the bottom line. The WHO would not have been able to call out the pandemic the way they did worldwide had Trump not done this presidential national emergency. Is that correct?
Yes, I believe so.
Okay.
Yes, it gave them fuel for the fire.
Okay. So Trump is responsible for this. He's responsible for our businesses closing, for your family and your friends taking the vaccine. And then eventually, what does he do? After the election, he comes out, he's pro-vaccine.
Oh, yes.
And that was astonishing to people. But if you know that he's the one that set this in motion way back when, then you understand what he's doing. He's a part of the genocide operation of the world. And he is a traitor to the United States because he sold us out because of 5 or up to 24 people having the flu.
Five.
Well, then it was up to 24, Douglas says.
Well, yeah, but the original pronouncement was when there was 5.
Exactly. 5 people. 100,000 people a year die of flu, and more than that die of pneumonia.
So 5 people sneezed. And then Trump used his influence, his power, and his position to then create a scenario where billions of people will be injured or harmed.
And the next 3 items on the timeline, if you haven't been convinced yet, should convince you. On the same day that the Congress supports Trump, which is literally an oxymoron during his entire administration, never happened. They fought everything he ever did. Whatever he was for, they were against, okay? Matter of fact, on Gab, Betsy has just posted all these Democrats stating they'll never take a shot that Trump had anything to do with. And now they insist that not only you take the shot, but that you lose your job if you don't, or that, you know, you're locked up in a FEMA camp or whatever else is coming next, which will be only a few minutes from now. So on March 13th, all of a sudden, the Health and Human Services assistant for preparedness put forth and got passed emergency use authorization for the worst genetically modified organism ever created that is basically changing the entire genetic makeup of every cell in your body called messenger RNA. Never been tested. It was tested in one case in Germany, and every single animal that was given it was dead after between 3 to 6 months. And so where did they get the idea to allow emergency use only for a drug that had never been effective in anything ever?
And to add to that, put a little rocket fuel in it and make it Operation Warp Speed.
That's the next thing. But it's strange that on March 13th, emergency use authorization was given to the most questionable drug ever created in human history. And then on April the 10th, there was an order by the FDA to outlaw the use of ivermectin, which we now know has stopped all coronavirus in Japan. They aren't using any vaccines. They're only using ivermectin. Many countries are doing that. As you know, AstraZeneca has been outlawed in 20 countries, and AstraZeneca is messenger RNA also, but it's even worse than Pfizer and Moderna and Johnson & Johnson. But the point is, the FDA came out and took a drug that was on the drug schedule of the World Health Organization as one of the most effective and most harmless drugs with the least amount of side effects of any drug in history. They outlawed it because that was the number one treatment that would have stopped all of this in its track. And of course, Trump had to sign all of these agreements, right? Every speck of it. These are agencies underneath the control of the executive. So Trump had to be involved in all of this. And we heard him say that he was involved in much of this. He never mentioned ivermectin, now did he? He mentioned hydroxychloroquine, which now has practically been outlawed also. And he mentioned remdesivir, which is a drug that Anthony Fauci and Deborah Birx developed when they created HIV/AIDS, and they're called Virions. There's 27 of them. Well, we now use Remdesivir in the hospitals, and it basically puts you into pneumonia. You can come in with the cold, a flu, hypoxia, whatever. You're given Remdesivir, which, of course, Anthony Fauci makes money off of every single time that happens, and it's very, very expensive. And Trump comes out and says, well, what about this treatment called Remdesivir? Out of the blue, even before he mentioned hydroxychloroquine. And he said he took hydroxychloroquine. He didn't say he took Remdesivir. Aha. And then, of course, he said he had coronavirus, which then makes him immune to it. Then why would he get the shot? Now, March 13th, emergency use authorization for messenger RNA, this supposed, what I like to call fake vaccine, because it is not a vaccine. It is a viral vector experiment that is genetic modification. Then April the 10th, ivermectin is outlawed by the FDA. And then the thing that nails the coffin shut. On April 29th, Trump, who said that he invented the concept of Operation Warp Speed, to take what normally was a 10 to 15 year process of developing a vaccine and turn it into a few month process. And anyone who studies BioNTech or BioNTech, the German company that came up with messenger RNA in terms of using it for injecting people with it and having no success whatsoever, what did Operation Warp Speed do? It provided, because there was a national emergency and a nationwide public health emergency and a pandemic declared, all three of them, it gave infinite money to the pharmaceutical companies. Infinite money. Literally, look at the acts that created this. Look at the laws that created this. Infinite money. There's no limitation. And of course, you know, Moderna and every other company that said they had anything to do with a vaccine was given billions and billions of dollars. And so when Operation Warp Speed was put into place, Trump to this very day says he saved 100 million lives in America, which were the false projections of the Brits, basically. The Imperial College had predicted that America would lose 100 million people. Of course, that's complete nonsense. Operation Warp Speed was the worst violation of vaccine experimentation ever done in human history, and basically took what was known as a bioweapon and made it now fly under the false flag of a vaccine, which it is not. So you put those things together in a timeline, and then you have to ask the question, was Trump part of this conspiracy? And then you have to ask the question, oh my gosh, let's look back on some of the people he appointed, some of the things he did, and they were questionable at the time. We couldn't understand them, but this makes you wonder one of two things. Was he turned to the dark side in January of 2020 when he first heard about a couple of people dying from a supposed coronavirus? Or was he already part of the conspiracy from the time he came down the escalator with Melania? I don't know.
The fact that they backdated the effective date is one telling sign that the people who started this knew what was going on. And obviously it wasn't about the statistics. There was no statistical reason to declare a pandemic, which, by the way, on its face is fraud, because they're misrepresenting the health information to the American people. And then secondly, it's reasonable to assume they knew that this WHO, World Health Organization pandemic declaration was going to happen. And I did in March 11th, 6 weeks later. So perhaps that was why Fauci and all the others were against them jumping the gun like they did. So the question is, why did Trump and Azar jump the gun? And the only thing that we could come up with from the facts that we know is that they were protecting their super Pilgrim Society agent, Dr. Charles M. Lieber.
Yeah, and
whose father, by the way, worked for David Sarnoff at NBC and was one of the key engineers on the developing of the Aegis global surveillance system, which is now used in 5G. So we also know that some of those patents that Lieber has his name on were directly related to triggering nanotechnology, nanotubes, to be able to eject biological substances inside these nanotubes using 5G to heat up the water.
This is very minor, but when you have a government document like that, I know because we have family members that work in the government, when you sign off or you edit, there's going to be a record of it. I want to know who went back and changed that date and when they changed that date. We can find that.
I think that was in the original pronouncement. It's every copy we've seen of that has that added effective date. I mean, that's you just don't do that. It's like making a contract with somebody and saying, oh, by the way, you know, that stuff that I started charging you for about 4 days before we had the actual contract, I'm going to charge you for that, and you got to pay it now. I mean, it just doesn't happen. Plus, it's not supposed to happen.
Right. No, but it's the way that these lawyers cover their criminal actions, because it's a form of incrementalism, of nudging. You know, this CARE Act back in 2010, Douglas, maybe you could explain a little bit more. It already set in place what they were getting ready to do several years later. So after they had reauthorized, you know, reauthorization comes through and Congress doesn't necessarily look at all the details, and they certainly, you know, can't figure out anything. They're all puppets and proxies for the British pilgrims and other enemies around the world. But anyway, by the time that Trump is there and Azar is there, this thing has been already reauthorized several times. So that's just a matter of, yeah, we'll do it again. And then, oops, oh, we're sorry. We made a clerical error. We need to go back and correct it. It was no clerical error. They had this plan for years. It's very premeditated. And what we're talking about is Trump is a mass murderer. That's what we're talking about.
Well, the 2019 reauthorization of the Pandemic and All Hazards Preparedness Act of 2006, Trump had to sign that. Now, he had already called a national emergency and hid it from everyone. I mean, we watch the news like hawks.
Isn't that the thing that's bugging you the most?
Yes, it is. That it ticks me off. Had I seen that he had done that, because I've been watching their CDC site for COVID since day one, since before day one. I had found that site deep in the CDC site and brought it up because it had given me the statistics I needed for basically demonstrating, which I'd already done in other articles, that the flu shot kills 65% of the people who die of the flu each year have already had the flu shot. Between 60 to 65% of the people who die of pneumonia have already had the pneumonia shot. And I was already harping on that. I've been against vaccines since day one. And now I know that since 2003, they've been putting iron oxide and graphene oxide. Now they've amped it up. So it's paramagnetic graphene oxide nanoparticles in hydrogels, which are then stimulated, as you pointed out, by 5G. The number one place in China that first put in the most pervasive 5G was Wuhan. And that is where this broke out. And it broke out in three different phases, which were long before anybody ever thought that there was COVID at all, or that it had coronavirus had come, 19 had come into America. And then Trump hid the fact. He never once said that we were under a national emergency called by him after he approved Alex Azar creating a nationwide public health emergency. And then when the pandemic came out, unfortunately, I was harping on the law, and the law is actually supersedes the executive because it goes directly to the Assistant Secretary of the Health and Human Services for preparedness. And that person who has changed, there have been three people in that office since this happened, and that person alone declares a pandemic. And there is no provision for when a pandemic is over. And as I pointed out, all you have to have is three people in three different World Health Organization zones in America, in the world, and you can declare a pandemic. So it's the loosest law ever created that I know of. But why did Trump have to declare a national emergency? That was to give him extraordinary power to allow for Operation Warp Speed and for dropping all of the prerequisites for vaccines so that you could have emergency use only for a vaccine that could be produced very, very, very quickly. Vaccines take a long time to produce, even once they've been studied, examined, and given safety tests on animals. And then they have to take years. It takes 2 years to see what the effect of an experimental vaccine does to a human being. Now the whole world is in, we are the petri dish. We are the lab rats. And we will not know for 2 years what the real outcomes will be. But we knew that the CDC said from the beginning that messenger RNA will have to have two shots. And then later there'll have to be two more booster shots within 6 months. And then there'll have to be another booster shot every 6 months to a year permanently. Okay, so we have agreed to the CDC's not only emergency use authorization, but Trump's ability to drop all kinds of laws with the FDA, with all kinds of federal agencies, the CDC, the NIH, and all of them. And then basically, though he defunded the World Health Organization by 50%, and at one point said he was going to pull out of it, he didn't.
And he never declassified either. And he appointed Mr. Ruby Ridge, Bill Barr there to hold a position to keep us from moving our narrative of truth to a final conclusion. I mean, if you look back now that you know the truth, and a lot of you are screaming and yelling, I hear you on my email, you're very upset about this. Well, we are too. And I have answered this, that if this is a counterintelligence operation to expose the enemy of the world, the British pilgrims, then he needs to come out now and say so. Because if not, the other option is very clear and it is documented. He threw America under the bus. All you patriots out there in your boats and with going to the rallies and everything, he was a false prophet. Let him come out and get clean, and don't turn your back on this truth. Everyone in the world needs to hear this truth.
Yes, and then the World Health Organization, he didn't use the FBI or the Department of Justice to look into all that was being lied about by the mainstream media. For instance, all the hospitals were full. They weren't full. That they were taking people who were ill and putting them into old folks' homes and killing them. They were putting people on ventilators who didn't need them. They were treating hypoxia as if it were coronavirus. Let's remember Trump in Operation Warp Speed created more ventilators than could be used in the whole world. Why? Because the World Health Organization said that that was the protocol, that you were to give them remdesivir, which would cause them to need the ventilator. Then you'd put them on the ventilator, then they'd die. Well, basically, the remdesivir is going to take any flu, turn it into a pneumonia, and then you go onto a ventilator. I know I've been on one because I had pneumonia 4 years ago, and you're lucky if you recover from that ever, okay? So what did Trump do? He made more ventilators than could be used. Let's remember that in New York City, when he set up those temporary hospitals, the ventilators, they had so many of them, they were throwing them in the junk heap. And in the end, he had to put them on ships and send them around the world because he created so many ventilators. Well, all he had to do was 10 minutes worth of research, literally.
Really? Are you saying that Betsy and Thomas and the miners at AFI have more intelligence at their fingertips than Trump with all the intelligence agencies and Five Eyes? No, that's not true. What's true is that he's part of the plan to take over the world on behalf of the British pilgrims. If not, he needs to step up and speak truth.
We became ultra concerned when he started promoting the vaccine. And basically, in all the interviews I've heard recently, it sounds as if it's a recording. And he gives the same exact lines as if he's reading a script about how he saved 100 million lives and how he is proud of Operation Warp Speed, and that he goes in the same exact words every single time, which is very suspicious. Never once does he go off script. And what does he say? He says that he did the right thing. He saved 100 million lives. No, he didn't. He didn't do 10 minutes worth of research. He didn't get on the internet and look at the doctor who created the PCR test, which said the doctor himself who invented it said, you cannot use it to test for this. it will show up as false positives if you have a cold or a flu. The doctor who invented messenger RNA has been all over the internet stating that this has now become a bioweapon. The top doctors in the world, not just America, have all been on the internet showing you astounding evidence, blood samples, research, you know, the statistical research, medical research.
The former chief medical officer at Pfizer, Dr. Michael Yeadon, came out and called it a bioweapon.
And Trump doesn't know that. He continues to promote it. He promotes it because of the following. He's now has to be a politician to get reelected. But it was his cybersecurity department, his Homeland Security Department, his Department of Justice, his FBI that did nothing and came back with reports that there was not one single fraudulent vote in the election, in the false election that placed our a false flag Biden in the warehouse. He should be in a warehouse.
Okay, so now that we're bringing up all these anomalies that we've all kind of put on the shelf, what was January 6th about?
Oh, that was definitely to call us in to create a false flag of patriots storming the Capitol. And, you know, it was interesting, too, because after the event, there was this video of Trump and he's in the White House at the White House Gardens. That's what it appears to be. He's outside and he's saying, OK, you know, everybody go home and be safe. And you're going, what? This just happened and you're just everybody be safe and go home. But if you look at the background of the picture, it doesn't look like it was filmed on that particular day, which was a cold winter day and the bushes are not green and vibrant. And so you wonder, what is this? And that's when I felt like we were all being played.
The Capitol Police invited in the Antifa and Black Lives Matter and the other agents, provocateurs, into the Capitol. And then they said that it was an attack on the Capitol. The Capitol is a public building. You cannot attack a public building when it is a public building and it is opened by the security guards and the Capitol Police to people. They literally opened the door. And I said from the beginning, the moment that he put that out as an advertisement that this was going to happen, that's the stupidest thing he can possibly do. That will be used against him. An idiot would have known that.
Well, also, and again, now this is nothing substantive that you guys like to put a lot of meat on the bones, but this is what I'm seeing. I see a struggle for the Oval Office. You've got demented dictator Joe there, and you've got Kamala Harris ready to take his position. But we all know out here that Kamala Harris is an illegal alien. And at the very least, she's not qualified to be president or vice president because of her birth status. And then you have Pelosi in the wings. And of course, the agenda for George Soros and his son Alexander has always been a purple revolution in America, where there is a regime change and they place the person in office that they want, which would be Pelosi. And then remember, over Labor Day weekend, you have that nice little sweet picture of Pelosi, George Soros, Alexander Soros standing there with their crumpled clothes, smiling. I say, when I look at that picture, that's George Soros saying, we won the purple revolution and Nancy is on her way. But that presents a problem for the British because Doug Emhoff, who's married to Kamala Harris, is a British operative. So is she. She's there to hold the office for the British pilgrims. So I think you're seeing a lot of crazy stuff going on at the top. And then the pilgrims have to wonder if Trump can come back into office, who is going to be his vice president? Because clearly none of us out here want Judas 30 pence. He clearly threw us again, another one under the bus. He's a traitor. We don't want him. And so then you hear this, all this talk about Mike Flynn, are you crazy? Start asking him about his relationship with Richard Dearlove in the Privy Council. And, you know, he was a former Democrat and an Obama general. And y'all are just going to believe that he's here to save the day. Wake up, people. We are being played. Somebody ask you if you've taken the vaccine. Tell him you're not taking the Trump vaccine.
And yet he's proud to admit it is the Trump vaccine. You've been putting on gab that he's the king, or like Corona, the king of this vaccine. And it is not a vaccine. It is a lie. It is a fraud. We started the top of this podcast with the fraud that was committed. Well, there's multiple frauds here in our little timeline. All of them are prosecutable. All of them basically trump everything else. And you have to throw out everything that happened. So there should be no national emergency. There should be no public emergency. There should be no pandemic. There should be no emergency use authorization for messenger RNA. There should be no ventilators ready to stick down the throats of people who have hypoxia. We should have the treatments that...
And ivermectin should be in every hospital. Available over the counter.
Absolutely.
Well, Japan's distributing it to every citizen, aren't they?
Yes. Other countries are too. They realize that they've been played too. We've all been played. And you know, that's what con men do. Oh, he was a good con man and he's still conning you. Start calling him out.
We had pointed out back in 2016 that the National Intelligence Community had produced a report called Global Trends, Paradox of Progress. And in it, there is a clear description of who will win the presidency. And they said that Hillary Clinton had gone too far to the left and become a socialist, and that she refused to acknowledge radical Islamic terrorism, but that she would drop a bomb, probably, in my opinion, on Damascus, and start World War III. And they basically said why she was going to lose if she didn't change her political platform. In other words, the whole national intelligence community, all 17 of them, created this report, told Hillary she was going the wrong direction, and then spelled out, and the report was actually finished in 2015. It was available widely in 2016 and was disseminated to the public in January 2017. It says that if someone came along who would be willing to say, because Obama wasn't, because he was a Muslim, or he was raised a Muslim, but basically he came to obviously hate Muslims because he...
Well, wait a second. During the campaign, he said he was a Christian.
Yes.
Which is it?
He is a Muslim, but then he put 58 million Muslims into refugee status by bombing more bombs than any president in history throughout his 8 years. If you add them all up, he dropped more bombs than anybody else. He killed more Muslims than anybody else. But what did Trump say? He basically said exactly what this report, The Paradox of Progress, told him to say. It was his script. It said, be a nationalist. Go against radical Islamic terrorism, make your platform completely on populism, be a world economic leader, a business-oriented person instead of like the politicians who can only spend money.
And make sure to say that we're going to arrest and put Hillary Clinton in prison, and then later, of course, after you're elected, say, no, we're not going to do that.
So we've been saying that we've had doubts and unanswered questions all along. But until I looked this in the face a few days ago, I wasn't willing to admit that I had been duped, that I had been conned, and that basically I'm not quite smart enough to have known this. But then it was hidden that he declared a national emergency. A lot of these things were hidden in a way because the attacks against him were nonstop. So he always took almost the victim role and then turned around and fought those people who were attacking him, which made for really good drama, melodrama. And I think Americans all were so busy being involved in the melodrama that they forgot the fact that he had come in with a promise to disassemble the bureaucratic nature of Washington, D.C.
I recall now, one of the main reasons I liked him was that he had that persona, the "you're fired" persona, from his TV show, and I watched a lot of education in those shows. So the "you're fired" tough guy was who we needed in Washington to get rid of all these embedded bureaucrats. But then what did he do? He went into his office and then started hiring globalists and never fired them. So right there, we gave him an excuse that he's inexperienced with politics, that I remember discussions, well, is he just hiring them to learn about him, keep your enemies closer, that kind of thing. But after a while, that starts to grow thin when you have to get work done. You can't just be having conspirators around you. They get nothing done except protect themselves. And so a lot of this inaction in his administration has been caused by this inability to fire people. But now I'm seeing that the hires were not mistakes, that they were the people they wanted. These were all the globalists, the Pilgrim Society people that were all a part of this agenda to depopulate the earth and make more room for themselves.
And to bring down America and to manage the financial collapse, which we are seeing the beginning of, but will become more prevalent, and we will see that as well. And then I know, Michael, you wouldn't say this, but I'm gonna say this. We did a lot of shows on the theft of social media. We presented to the president in writing, not over a blog, but hand-delivered packages of materials of how the theft of social media went down, and recommended to the president that this was a solution for him and that office to get control of social media.
By the way, that was from hundreds of our shareholders.
Yes, yes, American citizens, very concerned about what this social media and the ill and the censorship that it was doing. And that was presented. We took pictures of that. We presented to our audience. People in our audience know about that story. And what did he do in response? He had everyone send their complaints to him, and he's wrapping it up in a big lawsuit. And as soon as I saw that, I went, really? So now we have a lawsuit. So now all of your complaints are all in a nice little package that's all tied down, and nobody can get to it until this court case, which who knows where it is in the process or when it will ever be finished. So you see, even there, he took the action to suppress the truth about social media, to make it seem like he was working for Americans to do something about censorship, and not a damn thing has happened.
Right. Yeah, he did not do anything to counter mainstream propaganda, all the lying that was occurring. He did nothing to help us. Nothing.
Even when we pointed out that these were foreign agents coming and giving billions of dollars to do illegal things to stop free speech in America, nothing happened. We always were given the carrot on the stick. And it looked as if, oh, he has good intentions. But when you look at it now, upon reflection, you can see that very few things went forward. The economy went forward. There was a lot of good things that reached a lot of people that did happen. That is
true.
But
that's part of the con. When a con man cons you in the beginning, they don't tell you that. They make you feel good about everything. We're rolling. We're making money. And I'd sit back and go, you can't bring manufacturing back that fast. Do you know how long it takes to get a steel mill once it's closed up and operational? On the surface, those were just outright lies, hopium. So that's what the con did.
Yep, good con.
And a good con always tells you partial truth, but then doesn't act. So it's a bunch of words, and there are some things that are very good, but in the end, the principal ideas of justice, for instance, let's take, how could you not put Hillary in jail? How could you not demonstrate that the Silicon Valley cardboard cutouts stole social media from Leader Technologies? How can you not notice that a messenger RNA fake vaccine is going to kill people today? He can look online today. If he doesn't respond and answer these questions, then he unfortunately is exactly what Betsy's saying.
Yes. How can you have as your attorney someone who has been knighted by the Queen? Rudy Giuliani. I know he just came out recently denying this. Where did that come from? Why did you feel the need to deny this, Rudy?
And how could you not prosecute the whole Biden family for what they did in Ukraine, Iraq, China, and every other country that Joe ever touched? How can we let this pedophile, this completely perverse person, win the White House when we know that the corruption of the election manipulation was already happening in 2016? We saw it blatantly in 2018. And in 2020, why didn't he do more? Because there was so much more that could have been done. Why did he leave it up to Pence to either bring the alternative electors from the seven states that contested the election instead of doing something about it beforehand? So unfortunately, hindsight is 2020. And
so, Douglas, what is the takeaway from these new revelations in your mind? What should we do with this information?
Realize that we have a uniparty, and that our belief that we were in a second American Revolution is not true. That the uniparty, whether you elect Trump next time or you re-elect Biden, it's going to be the same.
I think it tells me, I know you didn't ask, but I'll interject here, is that it is imperative that citizens get involved at the local level with our politics. We have to get control of the school boards, the local level officials, up through the state. We've got to own it again. We in America can do without a president, and we can certainly do without Washington, D.C. What we need is to break up in a balkanized way, but get the power back to the states, because we are a republic. We are not a democracy. And now you can see what happens when people think you're a democracy, and also the dangers of anything being too centralized. So for me, I don't care if there is a president for a couple of years. Let's get control of our local and state politics. Let's elect solid governors in our state. And for goodness sake, stop listening to Donald Trump.
You know, we're talking about what we do with this information. And I think one of the, probably, there's two important things that have to happen. One is related to the elections, and the other is related to the media. And I think this, we've been reminded again in California. I'm amazed that people are acting surprised that they're finding election fraud. And it's dumbfounding to me that states are not choosing to go back to paper ballots. And I think that the principle here is elections are the property of the we the people. They're not the property of paid bureaucrats. And we have got to take charge of our property. And we've got to take it away from the secretaries of state, who are clearly in the pockets of these globalists that we're talking about. So we've got to go to paper ballots. Yesterday, and anybody, you know, there's that old saying, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. And we're definitely into that shame on me, given the last election, giving to all the evidence that has been presented in all these states of the fraud. Why are we continuing to do the same thing? That is the definition of insanity. And are we going to stop being insane, or are we just going to let our republic fade off into the sunset? That's one thing. Secondly, on free media, we've put proposals out there in the Miller Act notice how to get control of our media and have a separate media that is actually free and presents all sides of an argument. Right now, we're being completely controlled by the people that control the wires and the digits and the satellites. And until we get control of that and have free speech, free speech, free elections. If we don't have those, we don't have a country. And that's what we've got to get to. And I think that everything we've been talking about Trump is related to that, that those are all the symptoms of those powers being taken away from the citizenry. And we've got to get back to that.
Boy, that's for sure. There's no way Gavin Newsom won that election. When they started off with this recall, he was in the 30s. And then he gets, what, 97% in one city, 87% in another city. Okay, there's never been an election that was more rigged than what we just saw with this recall. And then what did the Democrats decide out of that? That we have to take the power of the recall away from the people, because this is what it turned out to be. This man who has all this incredible support, more support than any politician in history, though, in fact, there's not a single happy person in California. And how many people have moved out of California just because of him? And he has emergency after emergency. He refuses to take care of the forests and the burning. They're actually, the Sequoia forests are burning right now. And, you know, more fires than ever during his time. They're still dumping the water into the ocean, the fresh water that could be used. Everything he does is wrong. And yet we're supposed to believe that he got the best returns of any politician in history. That shows you how effective the election manipulation and fraud has become, and how emboldened they are. And basically, this demonstrates to me that all elections from now on, will basically demonstrate we do not have a constitutional republic and that your vote does not count.
Yeah, the citizens have to self-organize. You can't wait for somebody to organize it for you. You got to do it yourself. And if we're not willing to self-organize, then we deserve the result, which will be we don't have a country. We have a totalitarian state. I've seen that up close and personal in the former Soviet Union, and I don't want that for my country. I don't want that for my children and grandchildren. And so I, for one, am going to be doing everything I can to make sure that doesn't happen again.
And soon we could have Pelosi, the daughter of a mob boss, just like we almost had Hillary, the daughter of a mob boss of Chicago, and then Pelosi of Baltimore, I believe. That's what we have. We just simply have what the Russians have, which is just a form of political mafiaism. It's just a mob. It is who has the most power and control over the elections. Look what happened in Russia. Putin took the only person running against him and locked him up for most of the election. And basically, he says that Putin tried to kill him. So that's what we're having here in America. It is very saddening, and we have to start taking over on a local level and moving it right up. But when you have someone in the White House like Trump declaring a national emergency for five people dying of supposed coronavirus, that emboldened all of the governors to then take absolutely draconian methods, nefarious methods, going in Michigan, going back to laws of 1948 to take total control of the life of every person in Michigan. Now, what do we have? The sheriffs won't basically carry out her orders. The people refuse to wear the masks. They're doing whatever they want. Why? Because Americans are finally waking up, but because we have been so complacent, because we have such a life of luxury and leisure, we don't know what the stench of communism smells like.
That is correct.
You have to do is smell Pelosi, smell Hillary Clinton, smell right now the House of Representatives, and smell Mitch McConnell, who is obviously married to a communist. I mean, it's very, very clear what's going on, but nothing could be done about it because it's still controlled by the senior executive service members who are the shadow government that makes sure that nothing ever gets done in D.C. and that all the only thing the FBI and the DOJ does in D.C. is to protect the politicians. That's it. You didn't see them do anything else except what was fake activity. And then when you see that every single shooter, well, not everyone, 75% of the shooters have already been arrested by the FBI and released. And now what are we doing? The judges are so insane, they're releasing all the illegal aliens. They're releasing the criminals. It's become a sanctuary country. And if we don't stand up now, we are simply going to be just like Russian communism, Chinese communism in the very near future. So get busy, folks. There's a lot to do. And the good recommendation of Michael McKibben, go back to paper ballots, go back to a bipartisan chain of custody that demonstrates that we can get our power of elections back into the form that the founders of the U.S. Constitution intended it to be.